This will be our second last look together at the Sermon on the Mount. We've been looking through these weeks post-Christmas through Jesus' words that he speaks in Matthew 5 and 6. And we're getting near the end. And this is one of those sermons that is that's very tough for me. I'll say that at the outset. As we're hearing Jesus' words through these weeks, we're talking about things like love of enemies and worry and different things that Jesus is speaking of. And as we hear them, we may find, you know, some of them harder than others. And this one is difficult for me, not the least of which because when I read the story which James Bryan Smith, we're looking at, through this book called The Good and Beautiful Life by James Bryan Smith, in his chapter where he talks about these verses, he talks about running shoes. And I'll tell you the story in a minute, much like Helen's Barbie story, but he talks about running shoes. But I retain an affinity for shell-toed running shoes to this day, particularly high tops to this day. So when I read this story, I thought, oh yes, that really resonates. So the story that he talks about is seeing a pair of their Adidas, Americanas, when he was young. I think he was maybe around 11 or 12 or 13. And they're sharp. And he saw them. And they were outside of the price range that his parents would normally spend for a pair of running shoes. So he started to save his money and he admired these shoes from afar. And he would look at the ads which featured one of his favorite basketball players. And the shoes made the player better, of course, in a Be Like Mike type situation. And he finally got them. And when he got them, he would put them on and he would wear them to shoot baskets in his driveway. And when he came in, he would clean them. And again, anybody who lives with me knows how this resonates. He would clean them and put them back in their box until the next time he would wear them because he wanted them to look fresh. Well, after a little while, of course, they lost their novelty. He started to become a little less assiduous with the cleaning. And long story short, they got worn and they got holes in them and dirty. And he put them in the garbage one day and thought, those shoes that I longed for so much are now in the garbage. And he tells this story not as a lesson in how we should look after our kicks, but he tells this story to talk about the transience of things. And we all know this story, I'm sure. That thing that we wanted, or that thing that we want, which will make all the difference to us. And as I say, this speaks to me very much, and it's difficult. I was speaking about guitars this morning, and wanting a Telecaster. Anyway, that's my own thing. But this is the message that we're bombarded with constantly as we go through our days. This is the consumer response to the question, what does it mean to live the good life? And this is the question that's kind of underlying a lot of the things we're looking at and we're talking about as we're going through the Sermon on the Mount. What does it mean to live the good life? What does it mean to live in light of the kingdom as children of the king? So the consumerist response to what does it mean to live the good life is this. If you have our product, if you consume our product, it means you're living the good life. This thing will bring you happiness. And someone has written about the liturgy of the mall, the liturgy of the mall, the faith of the mall, the religion of the mall, if you like. You might consider them the cathedrals of our day. People flock to them in droves. The building to which people flock to worship. This is the environment that we live in. And it's easy to get caught up in it. Because I get caught up in it too. That's what I'm saying. The cathedrals have their giant pictures of saints. Models. The people who represent the brands. And if you identify with the brands, then you're accepted. The aisles and the displays are sparkling and pristine. There's no mess at the mall. Everything is great at the mall, right? Everything is perfect. There's none of the messiness of our lives in the mall. Things are always good. The smells, the sights, the music. We have the counter where you go up and you make your offering. Yeah, it's true. That rush where you see transaction accepted and you get your reward in a bag, which signifies that you've been accepted and you're walking out of the store and everything is good. And love in the liturgy of the mall is all transactional. Everything is transactional. Yeah. And the most pernicious thing about all of this is the elements of truth it contains, right? It does feel good to buy something new. They don't call it retail therapy for nothing. That rush of dopamine we get at the newness of something. The thing that's not talked about so much is the transient nature of this rush and how it needs to be fulfilled again and again until we have so much stuff that we don't have room for it all. So that's the situation. And in the midst of all this, friends, we have a chance this Sunday morning to sit at Jesus' feet once again, to sit at Jesus' feet and to listen. We were talking yesterday about the story of Mary and Martha and of one sitting at Jesus' feet and one doing, and how both of these things are involved in this following of Christ. Both. And we get the chance to listen. And we've been talking about the Sermon on the Mount as a catalyst for change, an interior change that leads to exterior action. And we've been talking about Jesus shaking up our moral imagination, shaking up our moral imagination. And asking the question, what might life in the kingdom look like for we followers of the King? What might it look like? And so this morning we hear Jesus: do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, Jesus says, where moth and rust consume, where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust consumes and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, Jesus says, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And two treasures. And if this sounds tough, you're not alone. It's tough. Because money is security. Stuff is security, right? To be surrounded by your stuff is to be secure. And this is a message for everyone, no matter how much we have or no matter how little we have. If we have a lot, it's asking us, is it our foundational desire to acquire more or to hang on to what we have? And if we don't have a lot, the question is it our foundational desire to the point where we will have a lot? Because then we will be secure and then things will be good. Because having money and things is a sign that we're doing well, right? Right? They don't call it well to do for nothing. And Jesus is posing, friends, a foundational question here. And someone put it like this. This is a quote. Someone has written in this passage, Jesus assaulted the whole human race at the point where the race is most sensitive, its desire for security and superiority. Jesus assaulted the whole human race at the point where it's most sensitive in its desire for security and superiority. And Jesus is asking the question here, which is the question that I want us to consider. To what do we look for security? To whom do we look for security? What is it, in other words, that we trust? Whom do we trust? What is it that we are seeking first? And this is not simply a criticism of materialism that Jesus is offering, or that I'm offering for that matter. It's not simply a criticism of materialism. It's a much deeper question, which goes like this. Where is your heart? Where is your heart? I'm asking myself the same question. Know that. Where is your heart? And the really interesting thing about this question in our passage in verses 19 to 21, I'll just bring that back up there. Note the last line. For where your treasure is, Jesus says, there will your heart be. Isn't that interesting? Jesus doesn't say where your heart is, there will your treasure be. But rather, where your treasure is, there will your heart be. In other words, what we do is going to affect who we are and what our hearts are like. Richard Rohr has a great saying about this, and he puts it like this. He says, we do not think ourselves into new ways of living. We live ourselves into new ways of thinking. I like that. I like those little statements. We do not think ourselves into new ways of living. We live ourselves into new ways of thinking and of being changed. And here's another thing. When Jesus is talking about the heart, he's not just talking about what we love or what we desire or what we long for, the things that we might associate with our hearts. In Jesus' day, the heart was the center of everything. It was the center of everything. Our thoughts, our emotions, our actions, our motivations. It was the center of everything. It was the place where everything originated. So what we do matters in the kingdom of heaven, because it's a great thing to take a new pair of high tops out of the box. Right? It's not just me, right? Thank you, kids. And look cool in them. And it's fun to take your new tech out of the box and take all the stuff off it for the first time. And it's a rush. And it's so fun, actually, that people will video themselves doing this and post it on social media so that we can all enjoy. This is what happens. It's the thing. Yeah. But these things don't last. And these things that we're chasing don't last. And even if they did last, they could get stolen, Jesus says. So what are we seeking first? And Jesus talks about treasures in heaven. What does this mean? Store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. What are treasures in the kingdom of heaven? What's treasured in the kingdom of heaven? At one point later in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus compares the kingdom itself to a treasure, doesn't he? He says the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure that a man finds in a field. It's hidden in a field, and a man finds it. And when he finds it, he hides it again, and he goes and he sells everything that he has to buy the whole field. The kingdom of heaven, the thing that's to be treasured above all else. Right after that, he compares the kingdom of heaven. He says the kingdom of heaven is like a pearl of great value. And when the pearl dealer sees it, he finds it, he goes and he sells everything he has to buy this thing that is to be valued. What are treasures in the kingdom of heaven? We've been talking about them through these weeks. Love and mercy and compassion and justice and poverty of spirit and meekness and a hunger and a thirst for righteousness. These are treasures of the kingdom of heaven and purity of heart. The making of peace. These are the things. The kingdom of heaven affecting every part of our life, including what we buy and how much we buy and what we keep for ourselves and what we give away, how we spend our time, how we give of ourselves and everything that we are and everything that we have, including our money and our time. Because in the kingdom of heaven, these are all gifts from God and none of it is really ours anyway. Because in the kingdom of heaven, as we've been saying these last few weeks, it's not about me. It's not about you. I don't want to look at anyone lest anyone think that I'm accusing anyone of being something. It's not about you. You know what I'm saying? I don't mean to sound hectoring on all this stuff. You're all looking at me glumly, and I'm thinking, I'm not trying to hector you and know that I'm putting myself in this. I just think that Jesus wants our moral imagination shaken up on this greed, avarice thing. He just wants us to shake us up. Because the thing is, these messages that I talked about at the beginning of the sermon are all around us, and you know because you were nodding and you knew exactly what I was talking about, right? And these messages are all around us, and it's hard to sometimes recognize the message unless we step away from it and we stop and we sit at Jesus' feet and we listen, and it helps us to see things in a new way. I was saying in one of our Bible studies recently on a Friday night, I said it's like a fish. When a fish is in water, the fish doesn't know that they're in water because it's all they know, right? Until you take them out of the water. So we need to be taken out of the water like fish. That's all. To begin to see things in a different light with the lamps of our eyes. This is the next little section of this passage here that we're looking at. The eye is the lamp of the body, Jesus says. So this is an idea. This, you know, when we think about our eye, when we think about seeing, we think of light coming in, right? I mean, this is the way seeing works. In Jesus' day, the eyes were thought of as lanterns or lamps, like headlights, I guess, kind of thing, that light came out of and illuminated things. Interesting. Kind of a turnaround of that idea, that the light would come out of our eyes and we would see things in a certain light. Jesus says if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. And the word for healthy here, it means single or simple or single. Single. If your eye is single, in other words, if your eye is whole, if it's seeing things one way, in the light of the kingdom. So in the light of the kingdom, when we're looking at things, we don't see things or possessions and look for our value in them. We don't find our value in stuff. We don't look at consumer goods, or rather, we look at consumer goods, for example, and ask, what does this look like in the light of the kingdom? What is enough? What is enough? What is a theology of enough? It's the eye that looks at what others have, not with envy, or the thought that if only I had that, then life would be good. But rather, it's the eye that's lit with the light of Christ, the Holy Spirit in us, filling us with a kind of light. I like this image. I like it. this light in us that's seeing things in a different way, and God grant that we have that, and God grant that the Spirit does that in us. Is this making sense, what I'm saying about the light? There's a verse in Proverbs here that talks about the eyes, light of the eyes. Do not wear yourself out to get rich. We don't often look at Proverbs. I was saying to Helen this week, we should maybe a little more. It's good stuff. Do not wear yourself out to get rich. Be wise enough to desist it. When your eyes light upon it, it is gone. For suddenly it takes wings to itself, flying like an eagle toward heaven. Do not eat the bread of the stingy. Do not desire their delicacies, for like a hare in the throat they are. Ugh. Crazy, huh? For like a hare in the throat they are. Eat and drink, they say to you, but they do not mean it. Proverbs. Finally, Jesus looks at the matter of two masters. There it is. This is where we're going to end. You can't serve two. No one can serve two masters, Jesus says. You'll love one and hate the other. Be devoted to one and despise the other. And I just want to mention here, Jesus is using a form of Jewish rhetoric here when he's talking about loving and hating. It's the same kind of idea when he says you need to hate your parents to follow him. You know that verse? Have you ever seen that verse? Okay, well, there's a verse. But it doesn't mean hate our parents. He's talking about divided loyalties. And this whole time, remember, we're asking the question, where is our heart? Where is our heart? Where is my heart? You can't serve God and wealth, Jesus says. The word for wealth here, you might have heard, is mammon. The word that's translated wealth. And it just means wealth, that's all. In Luke calls it mammon of unrighteousness, which is a bit like saying the almighty dollar, the almighty dollar. But it's money. It's just money. A neutral thing. But it can make things weird. The problem begins when we begin to ascribe to it the status of Almighty. When we want to serve it. When we want to worship it. And I mean, it's kind of a ridiculous thought when we talk about worshiping money. And it's not like we have shrines set up in our house to money. That would be absurd, right? It's like the idea of Scrooge McDuck. Bring Scrooge into this. He worships money. It's ridiculous. It's a cartoon. I mean, come on. We're not literally diving into piles of money like Scrooge McDuck. But we're saying, where is our heart? And maybe some of the ways we worship wealth are a lot more subtle. We talk about that in our small groups. We've been missing our small groups because of the weather. God willing, we can have them this week. So as we close, I just want us to think as we're going from here about what it would mean to embrace a kingdom theology of enough. What is enough? I think this question needs to be ever before us. What would it mean in terms of what we seek to accumulate and what we seek to give? I long for something simpler myself. Through these weeks, we've been talking about exercises. We've been calling them soul-shaping exercises. And we need to pray to God to help us. First, to fill us with that light that sees in the light of the kingdom, to ask God's help, because as we've said all along and as we'll continue to say, we don't do this on our own. We're not called to bring up some inner reserve of virtue. But to have to allow God to do these changes in us, to change us, to transform us. And I don't think we're talking, as I've also been saying, that we're not talking about setting up a set of new rules. I don't think it's about feeling bad for our lattes or our vacation. I don't think it is. I think it's more coming to an understanding, for example, that it's not just about giving 10% and do what we want with the rest, it's yours. See what I'm saying? I'm not talking about a new set of rules. Smith in his book proposes questions like, when we're at that point of purchase, do I need this? Do I need this? Do I need this? Will this bring me kingdom joy? He suggests we practice deaccumulation. Moving stuff out, giving stuff away. He talks about giving stuff up for Lent. He suggests instead of giving something up for Lent, give something away for Lent. Like every day. Yeah, sure, could be a thing. Give something away every day. And talk about what it might look like. All of this, friends, in the name of paying attention to the thing that is of more value than any earthly thing. That pearl of great price, that treasure hidden in the field. We're talking about the kingdom of heaven and being children of the kingdom. And God grant that this is the place where our treasure is and that this is the place where our hearts will lie. Amen.